This is WHFR Dearborn. From the station, Make Waves, WHFR.FM. Upcoming now is our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of WHFR's Public Affairs Show. Every week on Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m., we talk about local news, alternative views, and talk to a lot of interesting people, too, in the local Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, West Metro Detroit area. So glad that you can tune in or pick us up on our website. And I want to mention up front that our WHFR.FM website, if you want to listen to any of our talk shows, you now have to start by clicking on the talk show button. So the forum, the WHFR Journal, actually our two forum shows, Monday Forum, Tuesday Forum, they're all under separate buttons under the talk shows button. Okay, not too confusing, but now we have 3 different hours every week with news and information that you just can't get anywhere else on your dial here in the Detroit area, or probably anywhere else for that matter, too. So happy to be with you today. It is Friday, and it is the last Friday of the month that we'll be doing WHFR Journal. September starting next week. My goodness, where does the time go? And today is, of course, August 26th. In the studio with us, special guest, the Henry Ford Community College Theater Director of our current play, and it's Mary Bremer Beer. Now, Mary, I've seen, of course, for years, it's just been Mary Bremer. Probably everybody in Dearborn knows that. But you, as Dennis told me, you've added another last name.
I have.
Okay. And that's on some of the information, but other people aren't. So whatever.
Yes.
Okay. And her new last name, is it hyphenated? Or?
Yes, Mary Bremer Beer.
Okay.
B-E-E-R, just like in a bottle.
Okay.
All right.
Well, okay. Here's to you. Okay.
Thank you.
Chuck it. Okay. And Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director, is here.
Yep.
And he's done extensive research on the play Vital Signs and Mary's Background.
That's
so,
right. I knew her name was hyphenated.
Yeah. Ask. He told me. Yeah. So take it away, Dennis. Well, let's get more information about Vital Signs. This is the last weekend, and for some reason last week we briefly mentioned it but didn't get a chance to talk much about it. So
that's right.
This is the last 3 performances, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday.
Well, we were fortunate. We had Laith Salim and Mikhail Turner on Campus Connection. Lindsay and I spoke with them, but you're the director of this. And I wanted to, before we jump into Vital Signs, you're no stranger to theater.
No.
You've done this for a little bit, huh?
I've been around years.
Now, as I found out, many of the most, if not all of the major awards in the Detroit area are for acting and directing.
Yes.
And you told me about one, the most recent one.
Well, I don't know if this is the most recent one. This happened a few years ago.
Okay.
But I was given the Detroit Free Press Lifetime Career Achievement Award, which made me feel like maybe I should retire.
Well, at the same time, I mean, that is a huge honor.
Oh, it is, and I've continued to work. And theater is my passion, my love, and I feel so very fortunate to have a job that I love.
What were some of the other things that you've directed here at the college?
This is my first time directing.
No kidding. At
Henry. I've been teaching some adjunct classes here
That's
for the last
right.
couple of years.
Okay.
But this is my first directing job, and it has been a joy. The cast of our current show, Vital Signs, I have wonderful students. This has been a labor of love. Everybody here is really hungry
sure.
and eager and excited, and they have worked so very hard. And it's like the dream cast. Everybody gets along. They're supportive of each other. There are no what I call poopsters in the cast.
Right. Well, this is a big cast, too,
oh,
isn't
yes,
it?
Oh, yes, it is.
So I think, if I'm not mistaken, 14?
Yes.
Is that right? And this is not a traditional, when I say traditional, because, I mean, there's a lot of different ways ways to do plays and musicals, but this incorporates music, so it's a play with music,
yes.
Not a musical, but it's not what I would call, for lack of a better expression, linear. It's not beginning, middle, end, correct?
Not with these characters.
Right.
These characters are really extreme. My job in life is to turn people on to theater, not turn people off. And this is exciting material. And we've interspersed the material with, it takes place in a ballroom.
Sure.
And it's 1940s night in a ballroom. So we have a lot of wonderful 1940s songs and some students with some fabulous voices. And we also have in the cast Judy Fletcher Barber, who is a member of the theater staff.
Right.
And also Katie Ordwig is in the cast, and she does a lot of technical work on the show. She's part of the HFCC staff.
Now, with Judy, I know she's the first monologue, correct?
Very first one.
And then she has another one later that I heard is quite funny because she's the
second act.
The cocaine hotline.
Cocaine hotline. Yeah,
operator.
Very funny.
She's, as she put it, she gets very exasperated because people call for other reasons.
Well, she's also what makes it very comic is she's addicted to caffeine.
Oh, geez.
So it really is a neat exploration. Most of the cast members do have two monologues. There are a couple who only have one, but this is definitely adult material.
Absolutely. I think that's important to mention.
It certainly is.
Another thing that's very important is there's a live snake on the stage and a professional handler, I'm sure.
Handles it, yes. An 11-foot-long boa constrictor.
So if you're a little bit squeamish about that, you should know that up front, right?
Sit in the back row.
There you go. Now, and that brings up another good point. The seating in this, I have to get my seating right. Is this considered black box?
Black box. It's very small. We seat maybe we can get 60 in there.
Okay.
But it's up close and personal, my favorite kind of acting. You can see every bat of the eyelash, every piece of sweat on the brow.
Sure.
The tears have to be real. You can't fake it in this setting. And I love training students in that way.
Now, how do you take a series of monologues and make them cohesive and make them kind of, I guess, make a story out of different monologues?
Well, I think in this case, they're all very unusual characters. We have a lady who is a trick shot artist, and she travels carnivals and flea markets and whatever jobs she can pick up throughout the South.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about her girlfriend, and she shoots long stem roses out of people's mouths and little glass ornaments out of people's hands. Very interesting story.
Yeah.
A religious snake handler, thus the snake. That's
an ultra-conservative kind of a...
No, kind of Southern Mountain snake handler.
Okay.
Religious. You know, if you don't have the faith, if you ain't got the faith, you're going to get bit.
Right. Okay, and then I understand that some of the musicals, I saw the picture in the Times Herald, I believe.
Yes.
The four ladies, I believe Katie and two of them were Katie and
Judy.
And Judy.
Yeah. And we have another older lady who's a student and another younger lady who do the quartet in the opening number, which is Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries. We repeated that for the finale, and we have three people singing that, and... And then the whole cast joins in. The finale has a really clever trick ending.
Okay.
Within the number, so look forward to that.
Okay, we're not going to tell anybody.
Yeah. And those other songs are all 1940s. It takes place in a ballroom, and it's 1940s night in the ballroom. And some fabulous voices. A young man who's never really sung before on microphone, and he has worked so hard. All of these students have
Lathe Liam, okay.
Yes.
And we've talked about music, and we've talked about the funny, but there's some real tragic stories here as well, aren't
absolutely,
there?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a girl, a woman who was abused by her husband and terribly abused, and in the end she pours charcoal lighter on him and sets him on fire.
Wow.
I mean, this is really a serious comedy in many ways. There's a lady who's from a truck stop in West Virginia.
Okay.
She tells about her past life, and she worked at the only all-nude truck stop in West Virginia.
Okay.
And she tells her story, and the story about a preacher who comes in and takes her out. I don't want to spoil
right.
the whole thing.
No, I understand.
But these are amazingly unusual characters.
And they sound so different. And I guess that's the thing. There is some correlation?
Oh, there's, you know, just the fact that they are so... overlapped in what they do. And then you go back to life is just a bowl of cherries. Live and laugh at it all. Kind of if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
So the only time that they actually have a connection at all is during the musical numbers?
Not just the beginning and the end.
Okay.
You realize how many characters are in this world are here. And it's just kind of a look at all the eccentricities. You know, theater mirrors life.
Sure.
And so you can imagine how many different kinds of people there are in life. And so it's an evening of looking at the eccentricities of people.
Now, I just wanted to bring up the point. I believe it's Jane Martin wrote this. And was it not originally an all-female monologue?
Yes, it was.
With the option, I believe.
With the option, yes.
And you decided to bring in. How many males are in this version?
I think they're a total of four. And they're all awfully good. And I thought, well, some of these are very generic. Some of these could be men or women.
Sure.
And they've done a lovely job with
Well, Mikhail's character, Mikhail Turner, is it a cross-dresser? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
And also Hams, the monologue that Laith does. There's one male character who is says, my joy in life is giving pleasure. And this person is a mascot for ball teams and football teams, a professional
mascot. No kidding.
Professional mascot. And he wears costumes, of course. And he's really out in public, he says, only about 8 hours a week as a person. He says, it's a shame I had to leave my own species to become comfortable in life.
No kidding.
He's happier being a mascot. So different, odd people. And there are plenty of them in the world to expose.
Sure.
We're talking with Mary Bremer Beer here, who is the director of the HSCC current theatrical presentation, Vital Signs. Last weekend, folks, tonight 8 o'clock, Saturday 8 o'clock, and Sunday only at 2 o'clock.
Correct.
And, you know, we'll give you more information later. But, Mary, even though we mentioned some of your other awards, Vital Signs itself in this review in this week's Dearborn Times Herald, Sue Suchita, who is their drama and sometimes movie critic, has given you just a number one review at the beginning. For example, she just mentions that Vital Signs showcases 18 performers, a variety of cabaret style songs, as well as some intense first person monologues. Beer has brought out the best in a relatively inexperienced student cast. And apparently you actually treat us to the closing monologue yourself.
Yes, I do.
Ah, one of those Alfred Hitchcock things. Just can't keep out of your own material. Okay.
Well, everybody's so good, you can't resist. You know, I just couldn't. I couldn't resist.
But the best is that, you know, as we sometimes say on the show, if you don't read the stories all the way to the end, folks, it's actually a second page, 5B. It starts on 1B and then it goes to 5B for this review. So it's it gives you a lot of information about it, and I think it really excites you and makes you, again, for adult audiences, makes adult audiences want to attend this. But just listen to this quote of hers from near the end. Bremer Beer has pushed her students to reach new levels and demand more from themselves as actors. It was wonderful to see the HFCC company begin to develop a stronger acting ensemble. And so, I mean, we really thank you for your participation in our theater program as a teacher, but also now as a director, too. I think it's one of the great things about our theater program. The actors get a chance to experience different directors and a wide variety of different plays, too.
Well, I think it's an important thing for actors to work on stage with people who have more experience than they do. They'll frequently come up to the high point. They'll meet the level of the pros. And that's the way I was trained, and it's invaluable.
That's it. And that is the way to get better. The way to get better is by, well, in sports, playing somebody better than you. In this case, learning from those
people. You know, you go on stage with somebody who knows no more than you do, another college student who only has as much experience as you do. You know, there can be good shows, but you really strive when there are people who are a little bit better, a little more experienced. You learn a lot from just watching.
Well, it's inspiring too.
Yes.
And as the review Sue wrote, you have a lot of novice. You and Judy probably have the most experience out of the people in the cast.
Yeah, I would think so. And then Katie, who's a fine actress.
She is.
And then we have a lady from East Detroit who's done a lot of singing, so we put her voice to good use.
Good.
And but a lot of innate talent here, a lot of kids with a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And they work so hard. I mean, they're really eager. They want to do their scenes over and over again. They want, you know, just just lovely to work with.
Is that and I know wrapping it up here, but is that a challenge in itself with the monologues? Because I think for, as an actor, I would think that would be intimidating. I'm on stage by myself doing this. You know what I mean? There's not the interaction, so you're kind of not on an island.
Well, you know, I guess you could look at it that way, but I always find it interesting. I mean, you never know when your partner in a scene might mess up.
True.
Or somebody might mess, but here, it's me.
Trust
it's
yourself.
Me.
Yeah.
I'm on the line here, and so I better know it. I better do it right. And you kind of don't have to depend on anyone else. And, I mean, it can be, you know, if you don't know what you're doing,
sure.
It can be a horrible thing. But that doesn't happen most of the time,
right.
Especially in production. Most people will meet the challenge.
So we have that, as we said, it's tonight at 8 o'clock, tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and then Sunday at 2. Just in closing, I know that we're doing Sleeping Beauty in the fall, and the winter will be Grease. Do you know what's next for you?
What's next for me? Well, I do some youth theater productions for the city of Dearborn. I'll have one of those coming up in the spring. I'm actually doing a film, and it's a very eccentric character as well. And the film industry incentives have been wonderful for Detroit, for local actors. I still am upset that the whole acting community is upset that those incentives have been lessened a great deal.
Drastically, yes.
But people do come to Michigan, the filmmakers, and they're always impressed with the talent, the ones that I've seen and auditioned for, and they bring a lot of work here. I mean, you know, the trucks they have are from here, the caterers, the hotel rooms, people are here spending money. I mean, you know, yes, it takes a while to develop the infrastructure, and that was happening. It was happening nicely, and people liked coming back. Eastwood had another film he wanted to bring back,
right.
And several of those directors had. They say, "Oh, you'll never recover it. It'll take years." Well, you have to do an investment with anything that happens.
Are you listening, Governor Schneider? He's actually been on our show.
Has he?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We have again. It's Vital Signs. It's tonight and tomorrow, and we're gonna get a spot. Okay. Well, I guess go ahead, Jay.
No, that's we of course have a recorded announcement about it. So get your pencils and papers out. This is at the Henry Ford Community College main campus, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road, in our Adrae Auditorium, part of the Fine Arts Center here, right on our campus. And so, Mary Bremer Beer, thank you so much for
one,
taking this challenge and directing this play. It looks like a very exciting play. I will try to get there on Sunday.
Yay.
Well, you don't have to save me a seat necessarily, but
get there earlier.
I'm going to be on campus. Yeah. Don't wait the last minute. Usually doors open about half an hour before showtime. So if you're in line or something, 7:30, you know, as they said, it's black box, so there's limited number of seats. But usually, even if you decide at the last second, you can probably scoot in, although often, especially with this fantastic review, I think people want to get there in advance. I think probably the announcement will also include it, but there's a phone number.
There is. It's $12 for tickets, $10 if you're faculty, staff, or a student. And the phone number for reservations is 313-845-9817, 313-845-9817. Reserve them today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mary Bremer Beer. I'll get it down. Okay. And come to see Vital Signs this weekend at HFCC. Here's the information again.
Henry Ford Community College is proud to present Jane Martin's Vital Signs in the Adrae Auditorium August 18th through the 20th and August 25th through the 28th. This play, an extraordinary collection of unique personal experiences, is directed by Mary F. Bremer Beer with music by David Alexander. Performances will take place 8 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Sunday. The Adrae Auditorium is located in the Mackenzie Fine Arts Center on Henry Ford Community College's main campus, located at 5101 Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road, in Dearborn, Michigan. Warning, adult content. Tickets are just $12 for adults, $10 for students, faculty, and HFCC staff. For reservations or for more information, call 313-845-9817. That's more information on Jane Martin's Vital Signs. Call 313-845-9817.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, August 26, 2011. Jay Koronek here with you, along with Dennis Reimars, and we're getting into the local news stories and alternative ideas about some of the things happening in Dearborn and the surrounding area. Just sort of chronologically, we'll skip through here. Last Sunday's Press and Guide did indicate, as did the Times Herald this week, that the funds to build the new train station in Dearborn that would eventually accommodate high-speed rail have been officially obligated, as they say. So the money is there. I'm sure they'll do groundbreaking almost immediately because they have everything in place. And
they have to do that because it has to be done, isn't it, in 2 years?
Yeah, it's either 2013 or 2014, but I think it's 2013, 2 years.
Yeah. Now, you know, and it's interesting because we seem to talk about this almost every week, but the reason why is because there was a question as to whether the federal government would say, wait a minute, and put the kibosh on it. So
It's possible legislature, even though the funds were promised and all kinds of things happened for the last couple of years as part of a stimulus package, legislature in Washington, D.C., our U.S. Congress, could have pulled it back, I believe. They could have stopped it because the money wasn't technically out there yet. I mean, it was promised.
It wasn't in her hand, though.
Yeah, right. It wasn't in her hand, so they could have stopped the check, if you will, or made the check invalid, if you will. But we still have that. And, of course, we still have the larger question. Mary Bremer-Beer was talking about the potential for business and jobs with federal government investment, or in this case, state government investment in the film industry here, which is pretty much curtailed now, a couple years ahead of when I think it could have been phased out. But nonetheless, we had the same question raised on this show, of course. Here we're going to get a new train station capable of all kinds of transportation to become a hub for even pedestrians and bicycles and taxis and buses and maybe light rail eventually going who knows where. So it's going to be designed for all kinds of future growth. The problem is there won't be any immediate future growth, any immediate growth. They even have new trains and new cars for increased number of train trips to Ann Arbor and Kalamazoo, but they don't have the money to even operate the new equipment. And high-speed rail, well, you know, I've heard things on and off, you know, like Florida didn't want $200 million for high-speed rail. And I thought we asked for it, but I think that's been killed or hasn't been renewed. And I just haven't been able to track that down.
Exactly.
But that would help get high-speed rail going at least to Kalamazoo. And well, I certainly want to go to Kalamazoo at high speed. But, you know, that would then you could go low speed the rest of the way to Chicago. What's happening is there, and this is kind of interesting, some people believe, I guess the socialist out there, that our Amtrak system owns all the train tracks in the U.S. That's not the case, at least right here. The track, the actual track itself that the trains run on is owned by a private company from Kalamazoo to Chicago. And they have been unwilling to upgrade. Maybe they can't afford it, but they've been unwilling to upgrade themselves to give the track high-speed capability. In fact, I think it's only about 35-mile-an-hour maximum that's safe at this point. That's how unsafe the rails are west of Kalamazoo to Chicago. And so the trains have to slow down, or they're going to fly off the tracks, or the tracks will fall apart or something. So the government can't do too much about that. There's a lot of politicking and, you know, push and shove. I mean, I think this is an example of if you're going to have a decent rail system, it has to be federal government owned and operated, or at least guided, you know, supervised, saying you've got to bring those rails up to snuff or we'll get another private contractor. I mean, maybe the companies can still do the maintenance and get a share of the profits, but they've got to follow guidelines so we can have a consistent, you know, transport route at a consistent speed, especially Detroit to Chicago. So we don't have the high-speed trains. We don't have high-speed rail money that I know of. If we do, it's only to Kalamazoo.
Right.
And I'm not even sure we can put any more trains running, you know, a bigger schedule, more frequent trains running, because we don't have money for the people to operate them.
But wasn't one of the big problems that they had to have a completely new set of tracks next to the
existing
high-speed rail?
Yeah, and I don't think that's being put in, but the new train station location will have space for it, at least.
Well, then good. At least they're forward-thinking.
They'll have the space. They don't have the space to add another track, a high-speed track, in the current location in Dearborn. That's my understanding.
Right.
So as Mayor O'Reilly says at the end of one of these articles, and I always love reading to the end because you find out some really fun stuff at the end of stories rather than right at the headlines. He said, well, you know, this is the investment in the future. We have to start with this. You know, maybe the future won't come for quite a while in terms of the train station.
10, 12 years,
but
probably.
We've got the potential. It's sitting here, and it should be a glaring sign to our politicians and to the community that, well, let's take the next step.
Right.
We took the first step. Here it is. We could have better train transportation. And, of course, tourism. People might want to come from Chicago to come to Greenfield Village because that's going to be a special tie-in and an easy way to get into the village directly from that new train station.
Right.
So they're going to have some sort of walkways or causeways or under the bridges underneath for people to go directly into the village at the sort of the north side of the village.
Right.
Most of the entrance of the village is on the south side of that land. And we're talking about Greenfield Village and also Henry Ford Museum. So, hey, congratulations, everybody. Primarily John Dingell, but also I understand our senators in the state, Levin and Stabenow, fought in the Senate to make sure that this stayed funded. I mean, it seems crazy when you promise something and everybody gets working, all the local communities go crazy for 2-3 years, and they jump through all the hoops, and then if they would have been told, no, you can't do it, we decided against it. That's just ridiculous. That's just frustrating. I mean, you got to be consistent. And at least in this case, it worked out. So that'll get started quick. So imagine there'll be a few more highway tie-ups in West Dearborn. I assume that some of that will, some of that land is going to get pretty busy there. We're talking about land that is immediately west of the Lincoln, immediately east of the Lincoln Mercury dealer.
That's right.
Okay, so it's sort of open land. It's like it looks like parking lots.
Yeah, with grass growing in the cracks. And,
yeah, it hasn't really been a storage facility for the Lincoln Mercury dealer there for, well, there is no Mercury anymore, but the Lincoln dealer anymore for quite a while, and I think that's because they knew this plan was getting together. So they've already got I think they're storing most of their cars at the Ford Motor Company lots. I see an awful lot of Fords and Lincolns in the parking lots of the world headquarters.
That's right.
There.
So. Now that they can't use that, the hotel's gone across the street, so they can't use the parking lot there, and I know they were using that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's very exciting. Okay. We will talk later as we get close to the November election. Apparently, school board candidates have been finalized for Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, and we're not going to go through those today, but it's not November yet. But remember, you've got to be registered to vote by October 7th or 8th, something like that, in order to vote in November 8th election. So if you're not registered to vote, and it only takes once in your address, from your current address, to register, and then you stay registered pretty much. You don't have to, well, I got to vote every 2 years or I won't be registered. But if you're not registered, tell people about that. If they're not registered, help them out. It's very easy. Go to the city clerk's office with a few basic documents about where you live to prove that you are a resident in the city. It's very easy. And some people might think, too, if they don't know about this, that there's a charge or something. No, it's free to register to vote.
No,
this is America.
Sure.
It is free to vote. There's no such thing as a charge or a fee or a poll tax or anything. Okay, and that's the way it should be in a democracy. So, hey, the free stuff, we should just jump on it. Yes, right. Okay. Dearborn Heights has a little controversy. 4 months after approving their budget for this year, Mayor Pletko has introduced a proposed 3-year budget plan just to sort of get the planning and the decisions started for the next budget. And it's I don't know if it'll officially be a 3-year plan, but it will be something that they can talk about and work out. They are including a millage increase. Mayor Pletko thinks it will be absolutely essential for them. It won't be voted on this year, but he thinks that they'll have to have that maybe next year as part of a 3-year plan, that there's no way out of the hole except for that.
Well, so, you know, and it's wise to get people accustomed to that idea this far in advance, I think, especially if it's that needed. You know what I mean?
We've done that in the city. I know that there will be. We've already got one flyer about vote no on new taxes. But the story has to get out, the complete story. This is really just replacement money for what the city has not been collecting from us for the last several years. And so your taxes have been going down, but for the city to keep services going at the same level, I think it's ironic that the group right now that's saying vote no on taxes, they still want to have our pools functioning all of the pools still operating. Well, let me tell you, folks, whether it's pools or libraries or whatever, you're going to lose all of it. I mean, I can do scare tactics here.
Right.
I mean, I've heard all the presentations by the mayor and the other planning groups and the community participants in this. There's no way the city can keep anything close to the level of services we have right now going if that additional millage over 5 years only, 3.5 mils additional over the next 5 years, if that increase isn't approved in November, you will see massive cuts. There's no other choice. There's no other well, fire people or cut. You're going to get the cuts. So don't say, I want to save the pools, but I'm not going to vote for new taxes. It won't happen.
Right.
It won't happen.
You want to hear, just as an aside and talk about irony, they've had a power outage at the main branch of the library, Centennial
yes.
Library.
Yes.
So what have they done? They've extended the hours of the branches.
Right.
Good thing they're there. Just sorry.
They probably moved some of the librarians over there to sure. cover, of course, because most of the branches, I think, have only like one librarian. They
part-time.
Must be really busy. You know? And the other is all volunteers
sure.
at the other
sure.
library. So, I mean, train, but as I said, if you really want to know library stuff, folks, and how it's organized and what are the resources and how to advise people and where to find things and how to interpret information, you need a master's degree. Nobody becomes a librarian with a bachelor's degree. Did
that's
you
right.
know that? It's an MS in library science, master's of science. That's 6 solid years of training to be really good and helpful to the community. And
minimum,
it's been a standard
yeah.
everywhere. Every library in the whole country, you get a librarian, it's somebody that's got an MS. They've got a master's degree in library science. I don't even know of a bachelor's degree in library science, but maybe there is just as a prelude.
Right.
But you hire MS people. Okay.
It's like a pre-library science.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, I guess. But that's great because there's a lot of information there, and there's not just what books to buy and stock and not just how to organize. And of course, all these people have to be up to date on the new technology and all the new databases and e-book information and so on. So, that will be gone. That will be gone without the increase. And again, I hate to be a fearmonger, but looking at the budget monies, that 3.5 is essential. And look at the other communities around us. Okay, I think Dearborn Heights was saying they might only have to ask for 3 mils
right.
a year from now. Again, that's just a proposal, but they're going to have to ask for more. Other communities like Garden City, voters there for the last 2 years, according to our GM, Susan McGraw, they've been voting down millages that have been essential. And they're deep in the hole. I think the first millage was 13 mil yeah. additional, then 18, and now she said in November it's 21 mil additional.
And it kind of makes you wonder.
Whoa, what a chunk of change. But the people,
think
that doesn't
go
through the city, I don't know whether it'll dissolve. It'll just become the county again. I don't know what they'll do. How do they make up 21 mil additional your city really won't exist? Now, Susan did say that there's a certain amount of blame that some of those politicians really weren't watching what they were doing with the budget for many years. So there's plenty of blame there. The city of Dearborn doesn't have that blame. Neither does Dearborn Heights. We've been managing the budgets, I think, my personal opinion. Remember, the opinions of the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. But my opinion is that the council and the mayor's office, primarily the mayor's office, they give the direction, have been watching the budget very, very closely and have been trying to economize. Even Mayor Guido, letting people retire when their time is there, and not filling the position. So there's been a slow cutback, but consistent over the years in city expenses. CDTV, people know about Dearborn, has its own cable channel. They closed their studio. There's no more studio production, a single room where you bring people in, turn on the lights, and tape a show. They closed that down. They moved out of the building. I can't remember which building was in. The rec department building was it in? Laid off a whole bunch of people, announcers, camera people, and so on. And you mentioned the Centennial Library. CDTV was off the air.
Yeah.
Because that's the basement, lower level of the Centennial, is where CDTV playback has relocated. In other words, the people putting the tapes on or digitized from computers,
right.
however the shows are saved now and played back, the playback facility was without power. So we had no way to look at that channel on our cable systems and find out if the library was open. but they got CDTV up and running, even though Centennial, I think, may still be closed today.
It is.
I know it was closed yesterday.
My question back to Garden City, just you brought that up. Do you think, your opinion, Jay,
yeah,
is that a prime candidate for a new manager to come in? And because, I mean, right? Isn't that what's next?
Oh, they've got to be bankrupt. I mean, if you need 21 mils increase for each year upcoming,
right,
and the voters say no to that, they said no to, I think it was 18, I think it was like 12, it's been more
right
each over the last. This has got to be the last call.
It
this has
got
to be the last call, is that they're going to be heavily in debt and bankrupt, and they will get a emergency manager, and they're one of the cities that obviously didn't see a lot of things coming, and the people that were elected were not real careful with the money. I won't say they weren't smart about it, but they weren't real careful. They got poor advice, and they just weren't paying attention.
And the people didn't bail them out. But you wonder if the people just thought it would go away, you know?
Well, it'll everybody has expected, you know, that each year things will stay the same or get a little bit better.
Sure.
They'll be a little down, or this is like 4 or 5 years down and continuing down in terms of property values for at least another year or so, according to all estimates.
Sure.
And these are good, solid estimates. I hate to say that, but property values are looking at decreasing 5 to 10% more next year.
Mm-hmm.
After that, everybody's hoping, there's no way to know, that they'll start going back up a little bit very slowly. And that's why the Dearborn millage, if approved, will only be there for 5 years. Hopefully, the mills, the 15 mills that we have right now, will evaluate up, will get more value, and so they won't need the extra 3.5. They will have the same amount of money without the extra 3.5 after 5 years, and that can just go away. So I'm not sure emergency financial managers are the perfect answer, but
they need something.
There's a lot of cities, and candidates for office are few and far between, and having the right background and experience and being able to get elected. You know, a lot of the smartest, best people can't get elected because, number one, they don't have any personal money
right
to invest. They don't have a large network of friends. Shame on them. but do they have to have, you know, and they don't have any name recognition because they don't have a name that's similar to somebody who's already been elected. You know, I mean, it's pretty easy for, I hear that Debbie Dingell, the wife of John Dingell, is thinking of running for some office.
After John retires,
she's a few years younger than John, and she's been involved in a lot of committees, a lot of she might actually run for his district office or senator, whatever. Well, look, she's got the Dingell name, and of course the association being John's wife. So a lot of people will feel that they know her very well. And of course, we don't know what she'd do when she was in office, although probably would be a Democrat, I bet. So it's a difficult time for all of us. And I think it's those who are listening to the show know that I'm totally in favor of finding out everything you can. Don't decide now necessarily what you're going to do. These all should be open questions until you get a lot of information, pro and con, so you can make key decisions. And in that regard, and it is sort of a political issue because it's on the ballot in November, a very, very important editorial opinion written by Morris Goodman in last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide. And I'd like to go over this now because Dennis and I, just sort of rambling off the top of our heads, we read out loud the proposal that's going to be on the ballot in November that asks, should we eliminate the Dearborn Civil Service Commission? And the paragraph explaining it says, well, you know, we got a lot of union contracts and so on, and so we don't need the Civil Service Commission. It's in the charter. And I did raise the question, like, well, we just had a whole charter revision 2-3 years ago approved right by the people. Why didn't the Charter Commission say, we don't need it, folks, we're just going to take it out then? Why? You know, what's changed in the last 2 or 3 years? Were they just not paying attention to the Charter Commission? Well, Morris Goodman, hey, here's the behind the scenes. This will raise some question in our mind whether or not we should eliminate the Civil Service Commission. And I don't, you know, very often for newspapers, Dennis knows this, the title of the story, and often even the subtitle, are not chosen by the editorial writer. They're That's chosen right. by the editor.
The editor himself. Oh,
okay. Rehearsal. And sometimes they put a little spin on it.
To get your attention. Right?
Yeah, and maybe sort of exaggerate. Oh, of course, not in the mirror.
No hyperbole.
First issue is already on campus here,
it
folks.
Ink's still wet.
HFCC Mirror newspaper. But he, in the subtitle here, says, the administration, that's the Dearborn City Administration, and Council Agenda, they have an agenda behind this proposed change, one we haven't heard about before. Okay, so I'm jumping into it, and he says, what is most curious about this proposed charter amendment is that it is what it fails to say. That is, well, okay, he points out that November 2007, okay, it was 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, a new city charter said this is what we should have, and everything looked great then, and so on. So they didn't suggest. In fact, he says the Charter Commission in 2005, when it first met, he says they did look extensively at all aspects of the Charter. They saw no need to change the Civil Service Commission to anything like the now proposed Human Resources Commission. All 8 labor union contracts referred to in the Charter Amendment proposal existed in 2005, so there's nothing different. But the Charter Commission saw no issue of redundancy. He goes on to say, Morris Goodman says, since there would be a new Human Services Commission replacing the Civil Service Commission, no budgetary savings would occur. So why would the city council and the mayor want to get rid of the well-respected Civil Service Commission? And here's what he says. It does not take a genius political scientist or even a politico to come to conclude that the real reason Dearborn officials want to change from a civil service system to a Human Resources Commission is to rid itself of the citizen protector, Marjorie Powell.
Wow.
The Marge Powell situation. I don't know, Dennis, you remember some of those stories that we've done on Marge Powell. He goes on to explain, and I'll review for those listeners that can't remember. Powell is the longstanding elected by her peer as chairperson of the Civil Service Commission and the plaintiff in a years-old litigation in Wayne County Circuit Court contesting her unceremonious removal from the commission. Now, fair disclosure, Morris Goodman's her attorney. And it says
that that's important
at the end. Yeah.
Sure.
So he does have you might say, an axe to grind.
You got to read all the way through. That proves it, right?
Yeah. But nonetheless, yeah, they do have it at the end of the article here. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, Morris represents Marge. In May 2010, if you remember last year, City Council President Tom Tefelsky orchestrated her, quote, removal, unquote, after he threw a tantrum at a commission hearing when he did not get his way in an appointment situation. The day after the 2010 hearing, Tefelsky discovered that the city clerk in 2009 did not administer to Powell the oath of office for her fifth term, which he had done 4 times before, so he unilaterally declared her office vacant. That was Tefelsky. This incredibly minor technical point did not stand in the way of the city sanctioning over the last 4 or 5 years the continuing service of at least 3 other political appointees who were also not given their oath of office.
So he's saying it should be the same for everybody.
Well, you take them all out, well, I guess.
Or keep them all in.
Well, right. So why single out Marjorie Powell for her quote-unquote transgression? Because, and this is what Morris says, because she has been the classic pillar of rectitude, protecting the interests of Dearborn citizens for 8 years on City Council, including a stint as president, Tefelsky's job, you know, getting the most votes for council, makes you president of the council, and 17 years on the Civil Service Commission, most as its chairperson. Since Marge Powell's 2010 lawsuit may soon be coming to a head, one way to get rid of the litigation to restore Powell to a rightful place in the Civil Service Commission is to simply get rid of the commission. So if there's no commission, there's no lawsuit. And he says, why is it important to continue Dearborn Civil Service Commission apart from the Powell situation? Well, Morris concludes, first of all, there are numerous city employees who are not covered by union contracts. Civil Service Commission makes sure that only people who are truly qualified for particular positions are appointed so that the criteria for employment is always what you know and not who you know.
Okay, fair. Yeah.
Although I know a lot of political appointees that got in there under Guido who weren't real knowledgeable. But nonetheless,
right.
Okay, they probably had some degree or something, but they weren't the brightest.
They weren't the most qualified, is what you're saying.
I don't think so. My humble opinion, and I won't give any examples, but there was one or two. I mean, Mayor Guido was well known for his large group of appointees who were the ones deeply involved in his campaigns.
You know, this is another example. Oh. If she keeps her job, does the lawsuit go away? Do you know what I mean? We talked about other lawsuits.
Well, one of the resolutions of the lawsuit could be they could pay her money if there was any harm caused by her not being in this office. But it's a volunteer position, so yeah. Court costs might be paid if they continue. But if there's no such commission, to reappoint her is impossible if the commission doesn't exist.
But one of the arguments against this whole thing was, and just swear her in now. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get this over with and do it. But then
they could have.
Yeah. That was one course.
And then I didn't realize there was also three others that hadn't been sworn in, too.
Yeah, and that really changes things.
Yeah, but
it?
He was only trying to get rid of Powell. So he goes on, the last paragraph, last point. Moreover, while it's true that only a minority of Michigan cities have civil service commissions, they're usually present in strong mayor forms of government. That is, where the chief executive officer of the city is elected by the general public, for example, right here in Dearborn. So it's common in strong mayor-type governments, cities in Michigan, to have a so-called civil service commission. To argue that the civil service is outdated, redundant, quote-unquote, is what it says in the paragraph that's going to be on the ballot, is tantamount to saying that things like the Constitution are outdated. Ooh. The principles of ensuring that Dearborn's appointees and employees are independent, competent, and reasonably not excessively paid are worth preserving. From any vantage point, eliminating Dearborn's Civil Service Commission is just a bad idea. That's the opinion of Morris Goodman. You can read all of his words on thepressandguide.com, probably. I think they're doing opinions now in there. For a while, they were only doing news stories.
Right. I know the Times Herald website has them. I think the Press and Guy does as well.
They should, of course. So very well spoken. So that's not a slam dunk. We said, well, sure, it all sounds logical.
And, right.
But there's more to every story than what can be easily summed up. So there's some question about that. And if you are Marge Powell supporters from a ways back, as she did run for mayor at one point, did not win, but she did win for mayor, and she did run for mayor, and was very, very popular in the community. So just good luck in getting the whole picture out there so that we can make good decisions in November. So don't jump to contusions, as they say, at this point. Okay, let's see. I'm just jumping down the line. We don't want to leave anything out. We have about 15 minutes left in the hour. Oops, 13 minutes. Okay, a couple of notes here about fundraisers, and they're way away, the Dearborn Friends for the Animal Shelter did a benefit last night at Kernan's, and I'll just mention it, Kernan's Steakhouse in West Dearborn. It was last night, folks, August 25th, so we missed it, but it was called Hogs for Dogs.
Yeah?
Yeah. So they were selling, I think, hot dogs or something, or pork things. And
okay.
I don't know. If you're a vegetarian, that seems a little bit strange, but they've done that before, and it's been popular. But Dearborn City Councilman Robert Abraham is doing an open house at his house. And
really?
There's obviously a cost to get in. He's going to give dinner and appetizers at his house to raise money for the Dearborn Friends of the Animal Shelter. Because, if you reflect back, a year or two ago, he had a fire in his house.
Okay.
And there was great damage. And that damage has been repaired now. But they lost the family dog.
That's right.
In the fire.
I do remember
the dog
that.
Died. And so in tribute, if you will, to the family dog, he wants to try to do something to help the Dearborn Friends.
I wonder if he can
shelter.
Cook, you think? What's for dinner, Mr.
I'm sure
Abraham.
He can cater.
Yeah.
of course, that looks good as a politician who's, always running for office. Nothing wrong with doing those things. And it just breaks your heart to think that their dog died. Of course, I always think, why didn't the dog get out first? You know, I don't think he was there in the house at the time, but the dog was there.
Right.
But I just, I put all my animals first. I don't know about Mr. Abraham. So there's always reasons for this, but it's a good thing to do, and it's nice. I think more politicians ought to
invite
open
people
houses.
garage sales.
whatever. Yeah, sure. Help the community. It's a unique idea. I hadn't heard anyone else trying
it
before.
No, you're right. That is.
There's a little bit of to-do in the Times Herald this week. In the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., a couple of Republicans have proposed an anti-foreign law bill. and a number of area Arab American or American Arab or Muslim groups, all of the above, have been angered by that. And George Duraney just issued a press release today, in fact, saying that he was against that. Of course, it's not his House of Representatives in Lansing. It's the one in Washington, D.C., folks. Right. So George can't do anything directly about this. What this is about is things that were like on Fox News about Dearborn is under Sharia law. You know, that Muslim religion, one aspect of it, is actually laws that are within the religious beliefs of those who believe in that aspect of their religion, and they try to follow in their everyday life, but then they try to get the laws actually into application in the community.
Universally, sure. Yeah.
As a civil law, right. You know. And it would have to do with family and marriage and I don't know, wearing the coverage of your face laws and whatever. Divorce would be affected. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Sharia law is not the law in Dearborn, okay? And so Fox News really got that one wrong, and so has a lot of other right-wing commentators.
Well, didn't the mayor come out with a couple weeks ago and say that really?
It keeps coming back
at it
us.
Does.
And now there's this thing. Of course, a lot of laws are proposed in legislatures, and they got to go through a committee, and then they've got to get approved by one house, they've got to go to the other body, and then they have to be signed by a governor or a president or whatever. So I think the odds of this getting signed by Obama are very, very small, first of all, because there's no such problem. There's no such problem. Now, you know, is anybody see an issue here? Do we need a law for something where there's no problem? It would seem to me, totally wrong to incorporate Sharia law in individual city laws, even if we wanted to do it. We have a constitution. We have, there's no way that's going to happen in America anyway that I can possibly imagine, except maybe at the federal level, and that's just not going to happen there. We know that. It just wouldn't be fair to all concerned. It means that other people who are not believers of this kind of Muslim religion would have to follow these rules too.
But isn't it enough?
I think
it enough that a community, if that's the belief in that the dominant belief in that community, can they follow it? I mean, for their own cultural
the only situation where I know it's legally allowed is on Native American reservations.
You're right.
In the U.S. Mm-hmm. That because they've been forced, imprisoned, I'll say, okay, over the last 200 years to live on these arid, dried out, worthless plots of land or in various states of the United States. They've been allowed, with certain limitations, to adjudicate their own problems. Like if there's a thief,
right,
they can use their own tribal council and tribal police officers, if you will,
sure,
to capture and punish as they see fit, within certain limitations.
There's also tax issues there, because right. I know that people buy various things without extra tax.
And I think if you're going to be, and I use the word imprisoned, on for 200 years on land that's basically not worth anything after you were shoved there by the United States government, at least they give you a little a few freedoms, a little independence and empowerment, but not much, ultimately, not much. Sort of like giving inmates at a prison the right to watch TV.
Right, right.
Or something. It doesn't really mean anything.
Big picture, it doesn't mean. But then again, my son lives in Oklahoma, and they put casinos on some of the reservations there, and they're very happy with that outcome.
Well.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's
the Native American tribal councils get the profits from that.
Right.
And they see it as primarily people other than Native Americans who are losing money there, so they see it as sort of like they're winning in the end against the people that forced them to live there and took away their culture and their traditions and their land for the last 200 years. And also, of course, if you control the land, you also control the mineral rights too.
Sure.
So a lot of the reservations, especially in Arizona and New Mexico, and there's a lot of dispute among the tribal leaders and the tribes themselves these days about just granting these rights to strip mine coal and so on and destroy their natural environment. So there's even dispute within the tribes, but they do have the right to grant those kinds of permissions to casinos and or you know, logging interest, coal mining interest, and they can take the profits for themselves. What do they use the profits for is another question, and I've read a lot of, I'm actually a donor to the American Indian College Fund, and they call it American Indian College Fund, Tribal College Fund, and it they actually have a number of community colleges and four-year schools out west, and I think there's one in Michigan too, a small one in Michigan, that actually teach as part of their curriculum the native culture, native history of the tribes, as well as the language. Now the whole school is primarily in English, but I'm just saying,
right,
is that they can go to college and get a degree just like anyone else in all the traditional areas that we think of, whether it's medicine or law or social services or whatever, and still connect, in fact, even reconnect in some cases with their tribal traditions and their heritage, which they really couldn't have gotten much support for up until then. So I do know that there's the conflicts among the tribes, but that's the only other situation I think is legal where you can locally just say we're not going to participate in the laws of the federal government and or the state.
My question, this is going to sound really naive, is if you have an embassy, does that follow the laws of the whatever the country who operates that embassy? Because you hear about asylum and things like that, and maybe, right, I watch too many movies.
They are a protected sanctuary, if you will. And the thing that's always on the cop shows is they find somebody that's committed a crime or whatever, and they flash a diplomatic,
right,
a passport.
And they have immunity.
Which means they have immunity from prosecution, even if they committed the crime outside,
right,
the embassy property.
Is that true, or is that TV?
Oh, no, it's true.
Oh, okay. So then there's another exception.
Supposedly, there's not many of those diplomatic passports, but TV, you might think like, oh, there's hundreds of them roaming around, yeah, committing crimes. You know, that's not the case.
All right.
Because they can be.
I feel better.
There can be pressure from our government to not keep them in the country, to ask the embassy or threaten them in some way,
sure,
to export them, you know, to send them out.
But they don't have to face the music here. No, so there's that advantage.
Right. Yeah.
So. All right.
Anyway, so let's not worry about the anti-foreign law bill. I don't think it's going to go anywhere in Congress, even though a few Republicans have proposed it. Let's give credit where credit is not due. In terms of a story about in the press and guide, you should read it for yourself, grading our schools. There's two criteria, the so-called MEAP, or Michigan Education Assessment Program, and there's also the Michigan Merit Exam.
That's right.
For potential scholarships from the state. That doesn't cover as many people. Apparently, Dearborn and Dearborn area schools have done a little better on the MME. But the headline there, grading our schools, most pass. Overall, though, they didn't do real well.
Right.
Okay. So, of course, I know standards have changed. So read the whole article and see what you think about how the schools are doing. It's a real challenge. DearbornPatch.com, the only ones that have a story, and it was August 18th, about the Dearborn Final Master Plan. Remember all those 3-4 meetings where they got people together and talking about goals for the city of Dearborn in the future? The master plan has had its final session, and of course it still has to be submitted to the city council, and so we don't have to do that. But it's interesting to me, I didn't see any such story in the Press and Guide or the Times Herald about the final meeting of the Dearborn master plan. And also, DearbornPatch.com also has a scoop here, although it's fairly recent. I understand why it didn't make the paper deadline. Maybe we'll see it this Sunday in the Press and Guide. Dearborn schools lay off 57 paraprofessionals. Now, they have called back, as they do every year, a number of teachers that they officially laid off, but that's always done for legal reasons. Well, the legal reason was in the past. It doesn't have to be in the future. They don't have to give a 90-day notice,
okay,
to people. Thanks to the Michigan laws that have come of a legislature, they can fire them at any time they want to.
Okay.
Without notice. That's really not fair. I don't like that. But nonetheless, that's one of the things passed about how our school should operate. And so next year, this Dearborn, the other school district, they'll just fire whoever they want to, whenever they want to. And they don't have to give them a notice. But what I think is a problem here, people say, oh, well, we don't need paraprofessionals. They're not the real thing. Excuse me, folks. If you look at the school systems, even though we're bringing back 34 of about 50 teachers that were laid off, right, So 34 coming back, it still means we've lost 16 or so.
Right.
Okay. And the 34 that are coming back, they don't have any help. They don't have any professional, near professional level help, which means they're gonna not going to be able to do their job very well. 57 paraprofessionals are gone. So don't think that means, oh, that's nothing. That's your, they're sweeping the floors. They're helping the teachers.
Exactly. And it's not
it's like my daughter in Southfield Public Schools, she lost her paraprofessional who was the only one qualified in special ed. And she's got over half of her class is special ed students.
And she's not certified
in special ed.
You know, and it's not a leap to think that the paraprofessionals will be our next generation of teachers, right?
Right.
And isn't that the next step if they choose to take it?
I'm only guessing here, but most of them became paraprofessionals because they couldn't get the full-time job, but they're probably highly qualified.
Highly qualified, and they could be the next step, you know? Yeah. So, I'm sorry, I'm...
Whatever. So, anyway, that was DearbornPatch.com. Just go to Patch.com, and the city is Dearborn, of course, and you can read that. I would suggest that you get on their mailing list so you can get Dearborn stories every day. You can always delete it if you just skim the headlines and don't like it. They do recipes and all kinds of soft news, too, there.
But. Absolutely. But their criteria, I know some of the writers for Patch, and their criteria is very, their standards are high. So that's why we're getting a lot of information from
them. Well, we'd like to find out more about that. We've invited one of the writers for
an editor.
Patch, the editor of the DearbornPatch.com. But they're very busy, and I don't know how much they're getting paid to do this, but they seem like they're really trying to make it... a good enterprise, something that should be supported in the future. The one thing I'll notice, and I think we may have a chance to be interviewing someone from the Press Guide, one of their reporters, in the next week or two. the Press and Guide and the Times Herald, their stories are longer.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost always longer. And longer means there can be more detail, more information. As I say, the twists and turns of these articles, sometimes if you don't read all the way through to get to some of the details, you don't really understand what they're all about. And so Patch.com does a good job, but it's never more than a couple paragraphs. And so
it's nice to have these varied sources.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we know they're doing a good job.
And they can be, obviously, on the Internet, very immediate. You know,
right.
The very next day.
Oh, breaking news, exactly.
Yeah.
It's easier now, for sure.
So we're at the end of the hour. It's WHFR Dearborn, and of course, Highway 61. The Blues Show with Joanne Kay is going to be starting in just a moment. What have we forgotten, Dennis? I see a lot of stuff I didn't talk about.
Well, I went to MLive.com, and I found out there's a link that Newsweek ranked Michigan number one for job creation potential. And I just thought that was interesting. There, a lot of that had to do with the rebounding of the automotive market.
Okay,
and our average income in the state, but I just wanted people if you go to the Newsweek site if you want to read about that, it's pretty cool. We're